The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Shavua Tov, I tell you, it's always the best way to start a week with my favorite dream team.
Well, thank you very, very much. Very, very kind of you to say so. Rolene, lots happening in this neighborhood and lots happening in your neighborhood. So let's get down straight to some of the subjects. The Arab League meets in Cairo and they are now heavily criticizing Iran and Hezbollah. Now, this is part of that same theme that we've been following over the last few weeks where we're seeing this divide and lines being drawn with regard to Hezbollah in Iran and those that are counter to them.
You know what, it is quite incredible because you and I have been discussing it at length, and I really am convinced that the powers that be in the world listen to the Israel Report. I mean, why wouldn't they?
Absolutely. If you want information, absolutely. This is where you come.
So we are seeing more and more overtures. You know, we've seen it progress steadily for the last couple of months, but now things are really heating up. And by heating up, I think the region is heating up because we are seeing a Sunni Shiite, the alliances on various sides being drawn. And also the relations between Israel and Saudi are really, really warming up. Things are moving along significantly. And rumor has it that the king will step down tomorrow in favor of his son. You know, we will see tomorrow if this transpires, but certainly very, very, very interesting to watch. But over the last couple of days, the Arab foreign ministers met in Cairo, and they basically delivered a tirade of criticism against Iran and its Lebanese proxy Hezbollah. And looking at this, I'm thinking, is this perhaps a reason why Hamas is trying to normalize relations or take more of a backseat to the Palestinian Authority? Is it because there is growing angry sentiment towards Iran and their proxy within the region, and this could affect their fighting? This is just purely speculation on my part, but the way that things are moving at the moment, you know, it does certainly beg the question. Not only that, but the Arab foreign ministers who did meet tabled a resolution. Unfortunately, it's not very tachlis, as we say in the region, or dugrid. There's not really much teeth in the resolution, but there is a lot of criticism. And they say that they also plan, following this resolution, to brief the UN Security Councils on Iran's destabilizing policies in the region, and particular Iran's support for Shiite rebels in Yemen, who, as we know, a couple of weeks ago, those Houthi rebels fired a missile towards the Saudi airport in Riyadh. And also, what they are saying in their resolution is that Arab telecommunications satellites would ban Iranian-financed television stations for what they say is propagating sectarian and ethnic tension, and also posing a threat to Arab security. And we've seen this with Al Jazeera in Qatar, the Qatari-based news channel being kicked out of several Gulf states. So very, very interesting. And I think those other countries that are sincere about peace in the region and use Al Jazeera should be looking at this kind of trend. And the Arab League chief, Ahmed Abulgeit, said, well, while we are not declaring a war on Iran at this stage, and while we have not taken a decision to ask the Security Council to meet, we certainly are going ahead on briefing the Council, and maybe the next stage will be to call for a meeting of the Security Council and draft a resolution against Iran. So very, very important maneuverings indeed, Howard.
What is also interesting to me is, and I'm trying to recall, maybe you can, is I don't know another time that we've really seen various Gulf states and Middle Eastern countries really going against each other in terms of the United Nations, in terms of the Security Council. This really does work to change the entire dynamic of the global organization, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And also very interesting is that many countries, especially European countries, regard Hezbollah as a guerrilla group and not as a terrorist group. And the language coming out from the Arab League with regards to Hezbollah is very, very strongly branding them a terrorist organization and saying that the predominantly Shiite group supports other terrorist groups across the region, supplying them with weapons, including missiles. And we've seen action between Israel and Syria heating up over the last couple of months as we take out those convoys that are moving through Syria, from Iran through Syria to Hezbollah in Lebanon. And, you know, this was quite difficult for the Lebanese representative to the Arab League. His name is Antoine Azam, and he was very, very careful, you know, whereas he did not mention Iran by name. He said that Iran exploits various inter-Arab divisions and allows for disruption in the region.
Lebanon's in a very precarious or very confusing position as far as I can tell, because on the one hand they've got a real significant material problem with Hezbollah functioning within the borders of the country, but on the other hand they are no friends of Israel, and they don't even pretend to be. It's not like we're seeing much movement towards friendship like we're seeing with Saudi Arabia and Israel, like we see with Egypt and Israel, where there's a very, maybe not a friendship, but is certainly a firm and well-respected peace agreement. Lebanon is somewhat different, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Egypt, because today we mark 40 years since the peace agreement and the visit of Anwar Sadat to Israel and the signing of that peace agreement. But also, Lebanon, using words or rhetoric quite the contrary, they have said that they would highly advise against Israel and Saudi instigating any kind of war against them, because that we will experience a very, very harsh defeat. So definitely, I don't know what seems to be more exciting for us political pundits, what's happening in Zimbabwe and how it affects the SADC region, or what's happening between Israel and the Saudis and how it affects the Middle East.
So Raleen, just to clarify, as we make our little tables here and we put everybody within that region on the various sides, would we put Lebanon directly under or in the camp of Iran and Qatar?
I don't think we would. I think their position is quite precarious. You know, unfortunately for Lebanon, Hezbollah does form part of the government. So trying to deal with that is quite precarious, as you've said. But we've also seen Hariri members of the Lebanese government meet with the Saudis. So I think that if any country is going to be pulled from both sides, it will probably be Lebanon.
And whilst all this is going on, Eisenkot has given an interview on in Saudi papers. This is fascinating.
This is fascinating. So for those of you listening, Gadi Eisenkot is the Israeli Ramatkal, the Israeli chief of staff. So he's the head of the army. And he gave an interview to the Saudi media outlet Elaf. They are a London-based website. In fact, they do have an English page that you can go on and you can read the Saudi news. And the reason is very, very interesting. And not only have we heard from Eisenkot, but we also heard from Yuval Steinitz today, saying that there have been a number of covert talks between Saudis and Israelis over the last couple of months. Well, they're not so covert anymore, but this has
been
happening.
Keep a secret in the Middle East, yeah.
And according to Eisenkot, that one of the reasons that this interview, it wasn't initiated by Israel, was actually initiated by the Saudis. In fact, one of the reasons given for this, and you know, Eisenkot isn't a politician, he is the head of the army, and there was a reason for him speaking directly to the Saudi public, and that is to kind of ease them into the idea of a Saudi-Israeli warming of ties or bilateral relations. And, you know, it's also it's not to provoke the Palestinians. In fact, it's mainly to show the Iranians, the Syrians, and Hezbollah the proverbial bird, or to flip them the proverbial bird.
But in fact, more interesting even than him giving the interview is them actually publishing it, because ordinarily Israel certainly doesn't have a voice in any shape or form in many of the publications across the Middle East.
Absolutely. So this is a very, very welcome development. I mean, when we talk about Al Jazeera, we know their coverage on Israel, and we know the debate around kicking Al Jazeera out of the country.
Rolene, we had this discussion a little bit earlier here within the South African context. DSTV are looking at removing ANN7, which is, of course, the Gupta Zuma functioning TV station, and they're looking at removing it from next year from their offering. And we had this debate a little bit earlier on in the show, because my gut feeling is just because you don't agree with something shouldn't be reason enough to remove it. Now, if the standard is poor and it's not professional and the contract runs out, well, obviously from a DSTV perspective, they can do whatever they want. It's a commercial venture. But I really do, as we've discussed many times, chafe against removing some publication just because you don't agree with it.
Well, I think that the difference is whether or not you agree with it, or whether or not the publication, or in this case the channel, propagates something that is a threat to your national security.
Sure.
And this is one of the accusations leveled against Al Jazeera, is that the Qatar-based news channel propagates the most horrendous propaganda, and perhaps could cause risks to Israel's national security and safety. But, you know, if you are in the region and you do understand Arabic, which I don't, but I have it on good authority that if you watch Al Jazeera Arabic, and which is the Iranian Qatar, that alliance, and you look at Al Arabiya, which is the Saudi equivalent, that it is quite a fascinating, almost like war of the narratives.
Absolutely fascinating. Israel has fired warning shots at the Syrian army for the second day in a row. What's happening there?
Well, this has become quite an almost regular occurrence, which is quite a concern. We had 2 days in a row where warning shots were fired at the Syrian army on the Golan Heights, and their positions are coming from a Druze village, which they are using for their position. And Israel has warned that out of loyalty to the Druze, we might go in and protect that particular village. But we've also any shot from Syria towards Israel is in direct violation of the post Yom Kippur peace agreement, or what's the word I'm looking for? When you say hafsakat, ceasefire. There we go. Oy vey, Howard, when my English brain fails,
but
my
know.
Hebrew brain kicks in. What a moment. And you caught it live on air. It doesn't happen very often. So the Israeli forces appealed to UNDOF, which is the United Nations disengagement ceasefire forces, to say to them, Syria keeps on violating this agreement, and as per our warning to Putin just a week ago, that we will not, you know, we are not signatories to any ceasefire agreements between Syria and the rebels, and if shots are fired towards Israel, we will fire back.
Absolutely fascinating, as always. 5:53. That's where we're going to leave it. Rolene Marks with the Israel Report. We chat to her every Monday through to Thursday at around about 5:30. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your afternoon with me. That Israel Report brought to you by the Blue Agency.